Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So today we have somebody who's a little bit different than some of the technologists that we have on the show. We've got Tamsin Webster, and she's really a messaging strategist extraordinaire and all about building really big ideas. She's fantastic, and I think that really when you talk about making your organization or any project you're working on future-proof, you really have to be thinking about message first and the big idea. That's why we wanted to talk to Tamsin, and she's fantastic, so let's take it away.
So today I am with somebody who I'm very excited. You know how there are people who you kind of know, but you don't really know. Well, this is probably one of the smartest people who I kind of know, but not really. So Tamsin Webster, who you just heard, has a better laugh than me and also is a strategist, speaker, former TEDx executive producer. What have I forgotten?
Well, some people call me an idea whisperer, and I have to say that that's probably my favorite title.
You know, and I wanted to talk to you, and yay me for being able to talk to you about the conference that we spoke at a few weeks ago at Digital Summit Seattle, because I thought you have a really interesting talk that you gave that really kind of touches upon storytelling and how we communicate and how there are certain kind of like it's innate to us to be storytellers. And I find that really interesting because it's this kind of not antiquated, but it's this thing that's always been with us. But now you have so many different ways to tell your story, you know, with digital channels. So I'm wondering, walk us through, tell me a little bit about what you presented about, just because I feel like everybody's going to really enjoy hearing about that.
Well, you're right. There's so much out there about story and storytelling. And what I observed was that even though there's all that information, there isn't a lot of stuff that tells you, well, how do I actually do it? And what actually is a story? And why is it so important? And fundamentally, the reason why it's so important, no matter what channel you may be sharing your story on, is that story is how we make things make sense. It's how our brains code information. We are always trying to figure out who wants what and what are they trying to do to get there. Or if you're the person who wants something, you're already always constantly assessing who are the characters, what are the motivations, what are the actions, what are the things that I'm trying to get past. And this is something that happens pre-consciously. So we don't even think about something before our brain has already slotted it into this kind of code that's in our head about stories. And so when it comes to marketing and it comes to telling your own story, even, we really need to understand what that fundamental code is in order to be able to tell a story that's effective. Because if people don't get those pieces that they're looking for, then it's not going to make sense because that's what our brains are looking for. So at a very high level, that talk is about how to find the story that's behind an idea that you are trying to share with the world. And it breaks down what those pieces are that we're looking for and how to find them and then how to put them back together again so that you can change how someone sees the world.
People are so focused on figuring out how do I use augmented reality for my company, or how do I get my company on a new social platform or an app, that they rush and kind of lose sight of the fact that, well, maybe it's more important to figure out what your messaging is and how your story can connect to people's needs and wants. And I feel like almost storytelling is taking a back seat sometimes when it shouldn't be. So what is storytelling going to look like in a few years? Are we going to figure this out and stop being technology first, story second? Or what do you think?
I think the successful companies and brands have already figured that out. And those are the ones that you see continually be successful, are the ones that they know what the message is. They know what the narrative of the brand is, which is different, by the way, from story. And we can come back to that. But the overarching idea of the brand, they know that. They know what the brand is trying to build. They know who they're for. They know who they're collaborating with on this kind of collaboratively built story. And they're just using the channels as ways to to engage people and play out certain scenes. When you focus on the channels first, you can be completely missing the fact that you aren't putting the right information through them. And in fact, this is something I see all the time, that we focus so much on what we want people to hear, what we want them to do, that we ignore what they need in order to actually listen, in order for whatever they're hearing to make sense. So I'm pretty passionate about the fact that if you're trying to figure out how to make your marketing more effective, or you're trying to figure out how to stretch your, you know, constrained budget even further, your time and attention is going to be much better invested in understanding how do you best get information of any kind across before you worry too much about the specific channel where you're doing it. Because if I refer to it as a pipe and water problem, you know, it doesn't matter how brand new and shiny and you know, whiz bang and augmented reality your pipe is, if the water that's flowing through it is sludge, if it's not doing what you need it to do. You know, the answer lies in having a really strong sense of what you need to get out there and what the audience needs to hear, and a solid channel or channel strategy through which to do it.
Okay, so I want to ask you, because there's no good transition off of that, a few lightning round, somewhat irreverent things you can answer in like a second or two. You ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as everybody knows, nobody gets any of these ahead of time. So they can be anything, and you got to answer. All right. favorite city to speak in?
Ooh. That's tough. Does that have to include things there where I wish I could speak,
sure,
or where,
sure,
I have actually
spoken? Where would be your dream city to speak in?
My dream city to speak in would be probably somewhere in the British Isles. Let's go specifically a place I haven't been. So I'd say Edinburgh.
If you had to punch someone, who would it be? They can be famous. They don't have to be named. You can just describe them. Or the world ends.
Like, where the before the, I'm just not a violent person. I'm a lover, not a fighter. But if I had to punch somebody in the face, it would be whoever invented gerrymandering in the first place.
Oh, that's a good one, actually. Yeah, I think, you know what?
Gerrymander would be the person who actually invented it in the first place. So I'd like to punch him. I'm gonna punch him.
Okay, Jerry, we're coming for you. So I know, and okay, you stay super healthy, and you talked about going from not so fit to pretty fit. And if you've seen Tamsin in real life, she's like, yeah, like zero body fat probably now. So what's the,
I wish,
what's the, what's the number one healthy meal that helps keep you focused?
Oh, I've got one for each. Let's see. I would have to say it's going to be some version of oatmeal. So in the summer, what I make is my own variation on something called Bircher Muesli, which is an overnight oat recipe. So it's yogurt and milk and a little bit of apple cider, oats, apple, sunflower seeds, and flax seeds. And then that sits and then kind of gets into this awesome consistency overnight. And then in the morning, I add fresh fruit and nuts to it. And I love it. And ooh, in the winter, I basically just make like awesome steel cut oats and also add fruit and nuts.
Okay, sold. So
I'm a big oatmeal fan.
I'm throwing out my spinach and avocado, and I'm getting something else for lunch now. So,
Well, see, I do a spinach and avocado kind of thing. Well, see, I can't eat spinach apparently. So I've had to like switch over to chard and kale, but, my lunch is usually some kind of quick vegetable hash with, some kind of crumbled fresh sausage that I've made at some point earlier in the week.
Oh, nice. That's pretty healthy. What's the weirdest thing about you?
Oh gosh. Probably the strangest thing is that I still have one baby tooth in my head.
Is it in your mouth?
It's in my mouth. Yes.
Like it's in my head. Oddly enough.
But the fact that I have like, I think a 6-year molar and I'm 44 is a little odd. It's unusual.
That's pretty cool, actually. Yeah. I mean, you never know when that'll come in handy as like an ice pick or something. And
I'm holding on to my youth as hard as I can.
Yeah. Like, you look 18 months old. What's your secret? I got a baby tooth still.
There you go.
And that's helping us transition into like the important stuff again. What's a brand that tells their story well? Just one that you admire?
There's so many. A brand that I really admire is a Lodge Cast Iron Pans, and they don't actually do that much traditional storytelling, which is part of why I love them. I'm particularly fascinated by brands that break a lot of the rules of how you're supposed to build a brand or how you're supposed to market. I stumbled across a wonderful article a few years ago, and an online magazine or called Bitter Southerner, and it was about the story of Lodge and the town of South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, which is where they're based. And the fact that this is a family-run company has been for well over a century. And it's a company that most of us have one of their products in our house, and they haven't changed what they do. And, their whole ethos about this company is about what's going to be best for the town. And they have managed to survive and thrive and even be distributed by multinational companies like Walmart without compromising on anything that is what has made their brand. And I just think that's a wonderful
story.
Oh,
I love that. I think that that's a nice, unexpected recommendation for that question, because I think that you have to sometimes adapt your story to where you're telling that story, right? Do you think there are any adjustments that brands have to make as we kind of move more towards this fragmented future?
Well, I think the biggest adjustment that brands have to make is understand that that a fragmented message, as long as it adds up to the whole picture eventually, can be just effective over time. But that means that brands need to shift their perspective on two things. One, time frame. So that you have to understand that you given how fragmented things are, that it's very rare that you'd be able to tell your entire story in one channel, in one post. And in fact, you wouldn't want to, because then you'd end up being redundant because you just say the same thing over and over and over again. So think of it instead like all the pixels that are required to create an image on the screen. You need all of those things together in order to see the whole picture. But every post that you put out there, every piece of information you put out there should make sense eventually, for the picture that the people you're trying to serve are trying to see. So if I am, looking at the TV, well, I was just at the baseball game this weekend. Have you ever been to a baseball game where there's been like a square of the LED?
That's so annoying.
Missing. And it's just, right. It's so annoying. So you want to make sure that as somebody's looking for something, there's not something missing, but you also want to make sure that, the other thing that you sometimes see is that something's misfiring in that square. And so it's the wrong color. And so you end up drawing your attention that like you end up looking at that one little miscolored square and the whole field of it. And you don't want that either. So the first thing is to understand that in order for that picture to make sense over time, you need time. And so that's the first piece, is that, change the event horizon on when you think you're going to be able to shift people's perspectives about what they want or what they believe about your company. The second thing is also shift the perspective on how big of a picture, how much of the picture they actually need to see. So a lot of times the thinking about brands and the process of branding, which I have, I don't have an issue with brands at all, but I have a big old issue with the process of branding and how it normally goes, is that oftentimes what happens in this process of branding is that people sit in a room and they figure out, well, what is the picture that we would like people to see? And how does all of the stuff that we do make sense to us? And I like to think of this as what's the whole elephant, right? And how do we get people to swallow the whole elephant? And my point is that there are very, very few people whom you serve that are going to need what you do or want what you do all the time. And they don't need to understand everything that you do in every single way all the time. They just need, in the moment that they need a particular aspect of it, they need that thing to make sense. So if you've got a segment of customers that is basically holding on to the tusk of your brand, as long as it's the best tusk that they can get for what they're, when they're looking for a tusk, they don't really need to understand, but hey, did you know that tusk is also made by Allied Industries? They don't care unless there's something else that you also offer them that eventually they're going to want. I think we always think about how do we get the whole picture to them out at the same time? And they don't need the whole picture. They just need what's going to make sense to them. So that ultimately means the brands need to do a third thing, which is we've got to adopt the position of how do we look to the people that we're trying to serve? That's a perspective that just if we pay attention at all, is completely underserved because it's overshadowed with what do we wish they saw? What do we want them to see? Rather than where are we currently in
that point? I was just talking recently to the CEO of Sprinklr about this and about how brands are no longer in control, and the brands that succeed are the ones that kind of acknowledge the fact that they are not the sole stewards of their story. They have to include the customer in. They have to understand what the real experience of the customers is, you know, as opposed to just having this fanciful make-believe world where what you as a brand see as the story is the story. It's actually a lot more than that.
Well, and that comes back to what we were talking about before about, you know, this collaborative nature. So I like to think of a brand more as a collaborative story. And as soon as you talk about a collaborative story that doesn't have an end, you actually aren't talking about a story anymore at all. You're talking about something that's larger than a story. You're talking about a narrative. The classic example of a narrative is the American dream. You know, so the American dream, the idea that here anything is possible if you work hard enough, whatever. And, you know, people may agree or disagree with that, but I think we all agree that generally that's what, you know, America has represented up until this point. And there's a whole bunch of stories that people can point to that illustrate that narrative. And so a brand, now let's map that over to brand. Now a brand, my best and favorite definition of a brand is it's the sum total of everybody's, of your customers' experiences with you or of people's experiences with you. You know, so over time, it's not just what marketing they hear, but, you know, what's their experience with the product? What's their experience when that product breaks? You know, how do those things last over time? So over time, a brand comes to mean something in people's minds, which means it's a collaborative story that hasn't finished yet. It's still ongoing. This is where branding can get us so screwed up, really, because we try to say, well, let's tell this complete story and then try to deliver it to people and say, accept it. But if that story, that little tiny story, doesn't fit in with this kind of overarching experience that people have with the brand, they're going to completely reject it at best.
It's interesting because there are some companies that have even approached Firebrand at times. And what they've said is essentially, we want to get out a message of this, this, and this. And I know the brand enough to know that those messages that they're trying to get out are inauthentic or inaccurate. And I think the challenge is there, well, if you're going to spend, let's just say $150,000 on an, you know, little ad buy to say that you are committed to X when you're not actually committed to X, there's a problem, you know? So you can't just have storytelling that's totally disconnected from what you're actually doing. And I think there are some people who don't quite get that.
Yeah, because otherwise you're just quite literally telling stories. You're telling things that aren't true. And here's the whole point. That narrative is always being built no matter what story you tell. So my point is, if you understand that narrative, if you understand, you know, what I usually call the red thread of an organization, of a company, if you understand what that is, then it's a lot easier to figure out, well, what are the stories? What are those individual pixels? What are those pieces that we can tell? What are those things that support that overall narrative? Not what can we tell them that makes them think something? It's what can we do to reinforce the pieces that we want? And the things that exist that don't reinforce the narrative, well, that's not just the job of marketing. That ends up being strategic, operational. Those are the highest levels of the C-suite where you say, listen, if you want this particular rosy story to be out there, but the experience is actually something quite different, then you've got a choice to make. And that is either drop your wish that you're seeing as that story, that rosy thing, or you make the commitment as a company to operate in a way that over time, people's experiences actually reflect.
I'm glad you brought up the red thread method, because I know that that's something that you kind of teach along those lines. So how do you define the red thread method, and why personally have you found that to be very effective in helping executives?
Well, I'll answer the second thing first, and that is that we can't change what people do until we change what they see. And more specifically, we can't change what they do until we change how they see. So if, you know, so often when we're trying to change behavior, whether it's an individual or whether it's the market, we focus so much on what we want people to do that we don't pay enough attention to what they need to hear in order to do it. And that goes back to what we were talking about before, where people need particular pieces of information for things to make sense. The thing is, there is this connection, though, between how you see the world, what your worldview is, what are the particular things that make it make sense to you, and then what you do as a result. So for me, the red thread is that invisible connection between how you see and what you do. And what I developed with the red thread method is a way to surface those invisible pieces so that you can see them. And once you know what those pieces are, then you can use those to figure out what that overarching narrative is, to build specific pieces of content, to understand what are some of those, you know, pixels in the picture that we need to get out there so that when taken all together, all of this makes sense.
One thing that I really want to talk to you is because I have a lot of technologists and super big nerds that I talk to, and I think nerd is a compliment, so I can consider you one too. But you are very much in the communication world, and I feel that, you know, the title of the show is Future Proof. I wanted to ask you, given the fact that you can kind of see who's telling their story well and who's totally falling flat on their face, you've got a better sense of kind of what the future of business is going to look like, which technologies or industries will take off and which ones won't. And you can totally disagree with that statement, but I'm giving you the compliment. So how do you get better yourself at predicting kind of the future and figuring out what direction things are going to go on an ongoing basis?
Well, I think that the answer to that lies in why are people doing what they're doing and the way that they're doing it right now. And if you can look at that, you can start to see where things are shifting and what that might mean that it's adding up to. Here's what I mean. So given the nerd audience, and yes, I do consider mine as well, you know, another way to think about the red thread is that it's essentially like the operating system of a company or even a person. You know, the way that a computer functions on the surface, the way that we interact with it, right? You know, how it looks, you know, why things go where they go, the way it moves, the way that it does, all of it is based in what's coded into the computer. And if we can see that code, right, then we can understand, oh, okay, well, if I want it to go a different direction, then I need to change the code, or I need to see what I could do differently. And what I think we can do when it comes to figuring out what's the future of a market is that you can essentially start to reverse engineer in a very similar way. You're saying, huh, things are starting to look a little different than they have been. People are starting to focus more, let's say, on one-to-one communications than one-to-many. Or, you know, when the shift started to happen towards Snapchat and Instagram, people say, huh, people are moving from text-based to picture-based. Or when people started moving from text-based to audio, you can start to see those things happen. And you can either kind of catch the tail of that and say, oh, well, that must mean we need to start to create images. Or you can start to look, you know, I should say more accurately, and you can start to look at, well, what are some of the reasons that those shifts are happening in the first place? You know, what is it that people want? What are they looking for when they're engaging on social in the first place? Now, everything from, you know, human connection to status to whatever. So, okay, look at all those things. Are we starting to see shifts there in what people want? Because if you start to see shifts in what people want, not just in what they do, but in what they want, then you can start to see where might it also go. You know, second thing is, well, what's been available to them so far that has limited their ability to do that? And you can immediately see why it started to make sense that people started to move towards audio, video, and imagery-based platforms, because there's a limit to how much of a truly dimensional connection you can make with someone or even with an idea if all you're dealing with is text. Doesn't mean that it isn't an enormously powerful medium. Obviously it is. But how much more powerful is it, right, to see a full, you know, to see a full movie rather than just to read the scripts on the page? And I think that's what you start to see. So, you know, second thing to look at, not just what people want, but also where has the focus been, or what has the focus been where there's something else still in view or possible expansion of that view that can allow a different way people to get what they want. And then finally, what did some of these persistent beliefs seem to be about how people are operating with each other? And, you know, some kind of that deeper why. Why is it that, let's say, imagery ended up being popular?
I think that it kind of goes along the same lines of this conversation I had recently with somebody about the idea of keyboards and what's going to happen to keyboards. And I was thinking, well, keyboards are a shortcut for us to convey our thoughts because we can write them down. But ultimately, the thing as you know, human beings and as animals, what we're trying to do is communicate with one another directly through verbal and nonverbal cues. So keyboards were a way of writing things down because there were people you could touch with words that were too far away to touch them otherwise. So this is like my roundabout way of saying words are almost, and I hate this as a writer, I hate to admit this, but I think that viewing video and then viewing images is a little bit more innate to us as animals, as opposed to, you know, words. And that's why I think that people have to acknowledge this is not a short-term shift. This is something that really speaks to who we are as beings.
Absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right. And here's where you can still find opportunities, because you can say, yes, we have deeper, more, you know, we're wired for images, we're wired for positivity, which is another thing. So people are saying, huh, it's so interesting. People are spending more time on Instagram than Facebook. Well, if your Facebook feed is anything like mine, it's kind of like devolved into some, you know, occasionally into this cesspool of negativity, where generally what shows up on Instagram is kind of like high points of people's lives. And so it's more positive. But the other thing to not lose is that, you know, once you're talking about deeper content, there is still a very important limit on something like video. Video still requires you to actually see it and process it and consume it at pretty much close to the speed at which it's delivered to you. And that's one place where text will always still, in my mind, until we have some kind of like telepathy version of this, you can always scan something. You can always read it faster than you can listen to it. And so this is where if you're trying to figure out, well, what could be happening in the future, you can say, well, are there ways that we can create full dimensional experiences where we're getting all this rich content where we're still able to acknowledge that speed at which people want to consume it? Because I'll just give an example of TED Talks. I mean, I've watched a fair number in my day as an executive producer for TEDx Cambridge, but I've read many, many more. Because you know what? Sometimes I don't feel like I've got the 20 minutes to sit there and watch a talk, but I can read it in 8 to 10. And then if I want to get that full dimensional experience, then I can go back and watch it, say, oh, this is really interesting. Let me see how they actually did this piece. Then I can go back. So this is what I'm saying. I think we oversimplify. And the thing is that may be really counter to what everybody's saying right now. They're like, simplify, simplify, simplify. But there is a point at which you cannot simplify something any further without fundamentally losing something that's important to it. You know, it's apocryphal, but Einstein said, you know, make it as simple as you can, but no simpler. And I think when it comes to messaging and purpose and brand and all of that, we've gotten it just about as simple as it can be. And in fact, the minute we started saying that there was a single brand or a single why or a single purpose or a single passion or a single story, we crossed the line into a danger zone that actually hurts us long term.
One thing I'm curious your thoughts are about, what will social media advertising look like 3 years from now? Because if advertising becomes very video and image heavy, as it in a lot of ways I'd argue should, you know, what does that do to storytelling in general? So what do you think social media advertising will look like 3 years from now? Or are there any general trends that people should be paying attention to?
Good Lord, I don't know. I mean, and I'll say that honestly, the reason why I started the business that I did and the reason, you know, why I made the various career moves I did over time was that, you know, where my interest and where the long-term stability lay for me is still in how do you find and craft that message in the first place, and not in the channels and the trends, because I just find that if you try to chase those channels and the trends, then you end up spending a lot of extra effort. Again, doesn't mean they're important, but there's so many examples of places that just ignore it that, and are still incredibly successful, that we don't know there. So that I should say that I don't know that there are some, you know, that there are rules that always apply. But where it comes to where it's going to go, you know, and yes, maybe it's more visual, but unless those visuals add up to part of that larger narrative, unless those visuals in and of themselves tell a story, people are going to struggle. And as long as people don't really understand what fundamentally story is and what it's about, they're going to struggle because they're going to continue to be putting out essentially the wrong kind of information. Again, we focus so much on what we want people to do and what we want people to know that we don't give them what they need to change how they see all of that. And it just, you know, it doesn't mean just putting a different picture out there.
It's an exciting time because there's a lot that is a little bit difficult for us to figure out in terms of where things are going. But that's why I wanted to talk to you, is because you kind of have the long view of the way people have just connected to stories in general over time. So, I mean, thank you so much again. And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And thank you so much, Tamsin, again, for joining us. I told you she was great. I did not lie. And as always, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are sold or distributed. And that really helps everybody else find out about what we're doing here at Future Proof. Thanks again for listening. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.